You're listening to the audio version of Victory Condition Gaming, sponsored by Forget Me Not Flowers and Gifts in Barrie, Vermont. You can check them out online at forgetmenotflowersbarrie.com. If you'd like to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, search for Victory Condition Gaming, and you can also follow me on Twitter at DougVCGaming. And if you'd like to watch us live every week, make sure to subscribe to Victory Condition Gaming on YouTube. Earlier this week, Coriolis fans were delighted to see that Free League Publishing had opened up the pre-orders for the part two of the Coriolis Mercy of the Icons campaign. This is the last Cyclade, and I thought we'd have Coriolis project lead Matthias Johnson-Hawk and Coriolis writer Ricard Antoya to join me today to talk a little bit about it and to answer questions. But before we do that, I just want to remind folks that you can go to you can pre-order Coriolis, The Last Cyclade, at coriolis-rpg.com. And it is $39.99 US dollars approximately. Of course, it depends on the exchange rate and plus shipping. And you will also get the PDF of this book before it ships out to those that pre-ordered it. And if you would like to take it one step further, you can also pre-order the bundle, which is the book and the map pack, for $49.99 approximately US plus shipping, and that will save you about $5 once those items are listed separately in the Free League online web store. So take a look at that. If you have not already pre-ordered those products, please do so. You have till about the end of November. So without further ado, let's bring the two of the folks that made this book possible, Ricard and Matthias. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm very excited. I know a lot of folks are very, very enthusiastic to see that this second part is out and available for pre-order, and we'll talk a little bit about it. But first, would you like to introduce yourselves? Tell us a little bit about what you do at Free League, and especially with Coriolis. Matthias, I'll let you go first.
Oh, I am the project lead of Coriolis, and I work at Free League as a writer and editor, and also the lead manager of a game called Simbarum, which is like a dark fantasy sister game, in some senses, at least, to Coriolis.
Excellent. Ricard?
I worked my way in as a freelance a couple of years ago, actually, with Tales from the Loop. And then I got kind of Coriolis handed to me. For Coriolis, I write mainly. And for some of the other games, I've been either rules editing, some of the from Tales from the Loop, Things from the Flood, Vasen, things like that, and done some just editing work on some of the other products.
Excellent. Excellent. I will tell folks that if you are watching this live and you have any questions, feel free to leave them in the chat. I will try to address them as we go along. If you're watching this after the fact, feel free to leave a question in the comments, and I'll try to answer that as best I can after this has been live. Ricard, let's talk a little bit about this book with you. The book is 240 pages. Without spoiling too much, what should folks expect with this part two, The Last Cyclade?
I think the first part was the first book was kind of a taste. It was just something starting up, something starting to brew in the horizon, and this book kind of it starts escalating things and sets everything on a vector for change. And the ambition with that, I would say, is that we want the players to be part of that change, and we also want them to experience the wider contrast of the full horizon as they delve into these adventures.
Excellent, excellent. Now, the first, the part one had Emissary Lost had like two adventures in it. Does this book also have two adventures, or what do you say the format is for this second part?
It's made a little bit differently. We actually have two adventures that kind of bookends it. We have a beginning and an end, kind of a climax adventure. And then the middle adventure, so to speak, is actually kind of an open adventure landscape where the GM and the players can choose how much time to spend there. we make sure that in the book we provide four adventures, smaller adventures, that can take you through that segment, but there's also tons of material for the GM to insert their own stuff from their own campaign, their own ideas. If they want, they can delve deeper into some of the changes and events that happens during this kind of adventure set.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Matthias, my next question is for you. Since this pre-order window is fairly small, you just announced it, a few days ago, and it goes until the end of November, and it has an approximate delivery sometime around in December. I know with COVID and everything, you can't guarantee, production and everything. I'm going to assume that this book is pretty much ready to go, and you're just trying to get it out the door as quick as you can at this point.
And no.
Okay.
No, we won't send anything through the door before we are 100% happy with it. But I know what you mean, and yes, I can tell you that we are not many days from having the print files for both the Swedish and the English version of the book ready for print.
Nice. That's really great. The next couple questions that I have are in regards to Emissary Lost shipped to it was Kickstarted, and this time you're going to go with a pre-order route. The Kickstarter backers got Emissary Lost around the end of December 2018, somewhere around in there. Since then, Free League has picked up some more properties. They've picked up some more games. But what some fans probably don't realize is that Coriolis has become a Free League owned property. Like you own this property now. It's yours to kind of do with what you want. And fans have been waiting for the second part for quite a while. Was waiting for part two part of the fact that you were going to bring that. You were working on trying to get that in house, or what? I know it's a lot of folks. I know probably casual fans aren't aware that this is now your property, and I think that that's a big deal, and more people should know about this because it's a really cool property to own. And I was just wondering if that kind of played a factor in the that kind of gap between one and two.
I would say that it hasn't, but I'm kind of glad that it did take some time. The story behind this is, of course, that a couple of us guys who joined the new and bigger Free League after the merger between Järnring and Free League actually created the Coriolis IP a bit more than 10 years ago. So when one of the first things that happened when we did merge is that I got to, step in and take over as project lead or project manager for Coriolis, which was happy days for me. It was like I get to, spend time with one of my wonderful children again. That being said, what it meant for the production is that when I came in, and this is late 2018, maybe early 2019, we started looking at The Last Cyclade. And I don't think, you have to correct me if I'm wrong, Rickard, but I don't think it was 100% decided by then that you would write this episode.
I had actually started a little bit, but we were kind of looking at where we would go with it. So there was kind of a synopsis part of a first adventure.
Was that as early as you know, February, March?
We had a synopsis. Okay. But we hadn't kind of, because during spring then we started looking at the first adventure and kind of started kind of our work together as well. But that's correct.
And I would say that if anything of what I've just talked about impacted the release date for Last Cyclade, it is the merger, because that set, you know, everything back.
Sure.
It such a process isn't done in you know, just by blinking. So a lot of the stuff that we were working on at the time as two separate companies, when we merged, some delays were expected and couldn't be helped.
Sure.
So and today I'm kind of happy that we did get this extra time, me and Rickard, or mainly Rickard. Rickard is no doubt the lead designer behind this adventure. I've come along for the ride mainly as editor, and you know, trying to get coordination done between Rickard and you know, the guys doing artwork and maps and the translation and whatnot.
But I also think a really cool part of this was actually that I had started working on it with kind of the smaller Free League before.
Okay.
And then when you guys merged and you came into the picture, I suddenly got kind of the opportunity to work with kind of the original creators of the IP.
I had
already made some try to sell some direction, some kind of vector on this. We had to talk that through. A little bit.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a clash, but to be fair to myself, because I came on quite strong, I hadn't read any of the stuff that you had.
It might have been a bit shocking, actually. Yeah, to kind of get to that point.
And also, I mean, I have after 20 years of doing this, I have worked with freelance writers a lot, and it's not always such a smooth ride as it is with Rickard, I can tell you that. So it's kind of best in my experience to set the tone and then become the nice cop along
later.
The way, you know. But if there's room for it.
I felt like I won you over quite early, actually.
Yeah, it didn't take very long. No. a week.
This kind of leads into my next question for Rickard, which is, now that this is a Free League owned property, do you feel freer as a writer to kind of take these Mercy of the Icons books, you know, in, you know, more directions, or do you, you know?
I think the kind of the synopsis I had for the second book was a little bit of a test to see if they would accept the direction I was going in. But now it feels like we're kind of going full on, kind of all out there. So it feels, I actually feel, and this is a privilege, I think, as a writer on an IP like this, is that I've always felt very supported by Free League in general.
Nice.
And I definitely felt really supported by Matthias when it came to the ideas and the lore and what I'm kind of infusing into this and where I'm kind of pushing this. And that's actually a great relief. That makes it so much fun to work with as well, I think.
True. Let's get to a couple of the questions that are in the chat. There's some good ones here. Graham asks, hi guys, just wondering if there will be any other smaller info slash adventures slash equipment books created in the future to support the Coriolis line as well.
As you pointed out, Doug, we have acquired the IP. We are today the proud owners of Coriolis TM. And with that, obviously, we wouldn't have done this if we weren't really, you know, eager to build on this brand. So we have not only high hopes, but big plans for the future that I can tell you and everyone else. However, we are still discussing exactly what to do, when to do, and, you know, how to do. So it would be seriously unwise of me to speak openly about it today. Sure. What I can promise is that as soon as we know, when we start production, you know, of new stuff, we will announce it as soon as possible. Because nothing is more important to especially when it comes to the brands we actually own, than the fan base. So yeah.
I think.
No, take it.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I think from my end, I think the stuff that I'm working on now, it's very important to me that the books are not only a set of adventures, but it is a resource book, even if you would like to just use this as part of your own campaign or whatever you want to do. So I try to infuse as much as possible when it comes to kind of new stuff, ships, gear, whatever it may be, like adventure generators, things like that. Hence the amount of pages, kind of, in this book. But yeah, that is sometimes I can almost see Matthias cry.
Tell you what, the guys really crying are the graphical, the layout artists. Yeah. That get all these, sidebars and boxes and whatnot with new stats and new talents and new weapons and new ships, and yeah, it's like a jigsaw. Yeah, they have to piece together. Luckily, Christian is really good at it, so it will turn into a very nice book. Other than that, at the moment, the only other product that we have officially announced and discussed openly is the third episode in this chronicle, the third and final.
Yeah. That was going to be another question that I had for you is this, so can you, there was a large gap between one and two. Well, not a large gap, but it was a pretty good gap. Is there going to be that much of a gap, do you think, between two and three?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
All right.
I think I can just go into that a little bit. It's sure. Like when we did the first one, we had some of the kind of, I would say, almost legacy campaign stuff from old Jan Ringen and the Matthias crew kind of floating around. And I was looking through that. And that's where I decided to kind of push it a little bit. Like we kept some of it, and then we've changed some of it. But for two and three, when I planned out the second book, we also planned the third book kind of immediately. So now the campaign is kind of, we know where it's going in a much better detail than the first one.
Okay, nice. Excellent. Christian asks, since the last Cyclade is pre-order, I wonder if Coriolis and Cimmerum after this one will be a pre-order, or will you return to crowdfunding platforms?
We will decide this on a product or project-to-project basis. With the number of brands and the number of we have today, our own, and also, you know, the licenses we work on, and the sheer number of products that we release every year, we obviously cannot crowdfund everything. Right. So we have done some tests with like the first out, I think, was the Tales from the Loop starter set that we did a pre-order campaign for on our new pre-order site. Next up, I think, was the Destroyer of Worlds and some alien stuff, at least. And now we are going to discuss from project to project which ones, because it's not only a question of, it's not like if we wanted we would crowdfund everything. It's
right.
Not at all like that, because you know, crowdfundings are very good for new products that don't have a fan base since before, which Coriolis already does. And it's also very good when you have that sort of product that you have an idea, you have a core product, but you also have a lot of stuff that you also could enter into it or build upon it. In this case, we feel when it comes to the Lost Cyclade, and I can also tell you that with very big certainty that the upcoming, because there was a question about Simbarum, the upcoming starter set will probably also be pre-order. And because we feel that they are solid as they are. I mean, if we ran a Kickstarter campaign and it got funded, overfunded, like, I mean, you start unlocking stretch goals, there's also a risk that you put time and energy into producing stuff that are cool and hopefully nice to have, but you could put that time and energy into the next big thing.
Sure.
As yep. Well, if that makes sense. So it's always a discussion. Very bad answer to the question, because I didn't answer it. But
I think what folks should probably know is that crowdfunding is to see if there's an audience for a particular product that you're putting out. I know, and this varies between company and company. You know, what works for one company might not work for another. And if you already have your community built for a line or for a product, you know, maybe you don't need that to see if you need to build a community around it, because you already have that pre-existing built community there, and you're just kind of just trying to build off of that a little bit more by, you know, your methods as that you can provide. So
And the reason why I sound a bit unsure on this is that this is a discussion that is alive. It's not because it's we are still evolving as a company and as we're still trying to understand the business, and the business is constantly changing. It is growing. It is, you know, so what will happen in the long run is kind of hard to predict.
You just try to figure out what's going to work best for you as a company and as a business to go, you know, going forward. All right. I hope that helped answer some of that question. It wasn't quite clear, but you know, I think it kind of gives some of the explanation as to why you put some.
Yeah, but this is a Coriolis interview, so let me tell you that this. I wouldn't at all be surprised if there was a Kickstarter campaign for Coriolis in the future, but it's nothing that's been decided yet, and I don't know when it would happen.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have a question here. This is, in addition to this campaign, do you plan to release add-ons from a more anthropological, I knew I was going to just totally stumble over that word, perspective. I still don't know what the Civil War on Xalos was about. I get questions from players all the time.
Oh, this is a question for Rickard.
Okay.
So, I think probably not more than the stuff that kind of bleeds into the kind of campaign material or products we make in general, because I think Coriolis should be a landscape, and it should be highly moddable to a certain degree by the GMs. Like in general, we want to have the clashes between the different, like the hierarchies of society, and we want the different planets and the different views to be established, and we want to we want our kind of audience to know that there are clashes of agendas and all of that stuff, and oppression and all of that. And but in the end, I think it's up to the GM and their group to kind of take one of these nuggets. We're trying to just put seeds kind of everywhere, and take one of these and kind of make them grow. So we actually encourage people to grab kind of snippets out of the material that has been released and expand on that themselves to a high degree. So that's why we don't want to kind of box things in too much. And we have said a little bit that we're, I think like when we released the main book, we talked a little bit about that we're only going to have the main campaign go kind of focusing on kind of main systems in order to allow the kind of unmapped systems to be GM material to a very much higher degree. And even if we would do something in a campaign that would put something in a specific place or set a certain condition up, I think that that is also kind of moddable for anyone who has already been poking around in that area. If someone has already been kind of delving into the civil war of Salos, Salos B, then I mean, we try to not mess with that too much, but just feed it instead.
Let's see here. Telving asks, Matthias Lilia, as I understand, wrote a lot of the first Coriolis rulebook. Is he or will he be involved in the adventure writing in the future?
That's a little bit too early to say. Okay. He's a part of the Free League today, but he also has a day job that is not Free League. So, but we'll see what the future brings. He's in on discussions. I talk to him every week about this and other stuff as well. He's a living, driving part of the Symbrome IP as well. So, but yeah, I let me say it like this. I hope that he will be a larger part of Coriolis going forth. That would be really cool because he is the real father of the Third Horizon and also of the original game.
Bastian asks, a translation of the original Swedish Atlas would be really awesome.
Yeah,
I'm just throwing it out there. That's not even a question. I'm just throwing it out there for you.
I can comment on this because Coriolis has somehow ended up in sort of a fas. What say man in English? You know, not in phase when it comes to the English and the Swedish releases. So we have like parts of some of the Swedish books published in different English books, and a part of English books that aren't at all published in Swedish. So this is definitely one of the things that we are discussing right now, what to do in both languages going forth. And it's one of the reasons why I'm still sworn to kind of secrecy about what will happen is that it's a really complicated discussion. Sure. You need to figure out where things fit in, and then So
the Dark Orb asks, "Hey, lovely people!" They must be talking about you two. How come there was no beautiful special edition cover variant for the last Cyclade? Love your work as always.
Practical reasons only. When you do a Kickstarter, you raise the money and people pre-order the product like 4 or 5 months ahead of printing. This time we will actually go to print before the pre-order campaign ends, meaning that we won't know how many special editions to print. And that's they are special editions for a reason. They are limited and they are much more expensive to produce. So we can't just, you know, guess. So in the end, after discussing it back and forth for a bit, we decided that the limited edition would be a Kickstarter phenomenon in this case. And I hope that those that do have the limited edition of Emissary Lost don't feel that copy is somehow less special to them. I mean, it's the same book still. Also, I can say that there were never any special or limited edition of Emissary Lost for the Swedish audience way back. So for Swedes, the thing would have been like kind of the opposite. they could get the limited of episode 2, but not of the first. So anyway, I hope people can understand and forgive that if there are any people out there that are a bit upset. It's a practical.
Sure.
Practical.
And also, Martin's cover is really dope.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, that cover is amazing.
Thank you. that is one of my. I can't imagine why someone would want another cover.
It's a beautiful image. You picked a great illustration for that cover. John asks, will the information for a scene in part 2 be spread out over different chapters like it is in part 1? He found this structure of Emissary Lost counterintuitive. Can never find all the info for a scene in one place.
I can speak a little bit
sure.
to that. Yeah, I think the first book was... I think the format was only tested on shorter adventures, so it made sense before, like Ghazalis, it made more sense on. And that was actually one of the first things me and Matthias talked about when he came aboard as my project lead, was that we should really structure it in a better way. Many of the things, like how is a scene built, like how is an act built, how is a scene built, how are the events underneath that structure, where are NPCs placed, stats, etc. So that was quite a big thing, and I've made sure to do quite a strict structure now in this book. It follows a similar setup, but it's not gonna have you kind of jump all over the place. You're gonna stay within, like, if you're in an act, you're gonna stay within a few pages in the session and or the sessions that you'll have. I also could actually add to that. I got some requests after the first book that it would be good for some GMs wanted. Good kind of narrative texts to read for their or set the scene for their players. So now I've made sure that is a consistent quality of the product. It exists on kind of every act start. It exists on every scene. So it kind of builds up. And then we have tried to make sure that most of the relevant information is part of the scene. And then we have each event has its own, like we don't duplicate data. The first book had some duplication of information, and we made sure to kind of split that out and make the events a little easier to go through and the scene a little easier to read through. So I think this is a better structure than we used to have.
Excellent. Will there be more talents for the characters included, or is something like this planned in the future? My players crave it.
There will be so many new talents. Some of the boxes that are the people layouting this have been complaining about a bit. No, but yes, my intent was, there was also a change we did, was that the first book actually have a bunch of cool NPCs and they have their own special talents, but those talents are formulated only for them. So what I've done in this one is...
Spoiling a thing now, Rickard.
No. No. It's okay. No, what I've done now is that if an NPC has a talent that isn't part of the original rule book, then that talent has been kind of split out as a valid PC talent as well, or NPC talent for other NPCs. So I made sure that all of them get rules and are written in a way where you can use them. So
nice.
Feel free to use them. Yeah.
Excellent. Let's see here. That's a good question. I run various freely games and love them all. The artwork is awesome too. Really conveys the feel of the setting for each game. How do you choose the art style when it comes to creating a game? Greetings from Serbia. Thank you so much for tuning in.
This is a very good question.
It's
a little bit difficult for me to answer because I've had the luxury of being, you know, in league with Martin Griep, the league artist for Symbarum, Coriolis, Alien, and so on. Ever since we started Jan Ringen back at the millennium, in early 2000s. So I have never had to, you know, ponder that question because I know that Martin will get it right.
Yeah.
So when we did Coriolis back when, and when we developed Symbarum, same thing. Martin is kind of dependable in that way that you know that whatever he's doing, it will be quite all right. So, and then again, we are working on new stuff now, and we have an art direction team, or, you know, a development team for the products that we do. And Martin is often included in discussions about the art. Christian, who is our main layout artist, is always part of that discussion too. And then the project lead. So it could be me, or it could be Thomas Herrenstam, or it could be Nils Karlén. And then we always, you know, people say this, and then in our case, it's absolutely true that we are a very close team, and that, you know, if I'm developing something, I always want the input from the rest of the guys.
Sure.
So we have a very good collaboration in that way, especially in the concept stage when things are, you know, emerging. And we try to be as constructively critical as we can, sometimes playing the devil's advocate just to, you know, question what we're doing and keep us sharp in our and try to think differently. So most often Martin is you know, there are some projects where he isn't the lead,
right?
And then it becomes more of a discussion. But when in the games that I work with, he is the lead. So to back to the very short answer, I don't know.
I have some input on that.
Sure.
I think, for example, if you look at Martin's style, he allows a lot of interpretation into his drawings. So there is he always lets his illustrations have a certain vagueness and let the kind of viewer build a story around that. I think that direction actually bleeds into the other really talented illustrators that we have in this book, for example, and that we had in Mercy of the Icons 1 as well, which is like we want to set the scene for the audience. We don't want to be too precise. Like we don't want to go into details. We want to capture feeling. And I think that's also what the Coriolis kind of lore and setting is about as well. You want to capture that kind of, there is this different thing, this place is a little bit different than the other role-playing games around you, and you want to kind of just hold on to that nugget, but not but allow people to kind of make their own paths within that. And I think that's definitely looking at all the illustrations that we have for this book. They definitely allow you to go, what? Oh, wait. Oh, this could be that. And you know, build your own stories into the scene.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love Martin's style. It's just, yeah, he's probably one of my favorite RPG artists, to be honest, if I'm being honest. And I'm a little biased because, you know, I got this Free League logo behind me, but, you know, even before I was a big fan of his work.
I should say that I was mainly talking about, you know, when designing a brand new game earlier, but when it comes to designing or illustrating a specific product within the game line, it is obviously very important that the artist that, you know, jumps on board fits the overall art style of the game.
Sure.
And in this case, it is Gustav Ekelund, who has done work on many of our games, not least Simbarum, but Coriolis is one. Also Tales from the Loop, I think. Rickard, maybe you know better.
I think
other stuff as well. And he and Martin has that same kind of, you know, suggestive, mysterious way of you know, drawing you into the art.
Yeah.
The art is in Coriolis, I would say, a very, very big, part of what makes it so immersive.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely.
I think it's not, like, to put it in a sentence, it's almost like it's not so much about faces, it's about shapes and kind of the light and all of that stuff.
Yep. Absolutely. We're kind of running out of time. We've actually gone over time, but there's two more questions I have for you. One of them is in the chat, and then I have one for you as well before we close. Telving asks, will there be any Coriolis novels? That's a question that we get asked quite a bit. So I figured we'd just address it because that's and I know that there's been some previously, I think, isn't that?
There is one that I know. Yeah. Written by Matthias Lilja himself. And I think it was published along with, you know, MSR Lost, at least as an ebook. But I have to check that out. I think it was a stretch goal in that Kickstarter campaign, but I'm not 100% sure. But that's an awesome book. Aside from that, there are no decisions as of yet when it comes to releasing more novels.
Okay.
What was it called? I think I can find it.
That's right. I was gonna ask Rickard if that was something that he'd be in favor of doing, since he's written, you know, he's working on these campaign books as a novel, something that you would be interested in putting together.
I think for me personally, I'm into the sandbox. Like, okay. I really like concept of constructing stuff, but I also really like the juicy kind of, you know, scene setting snippets as well. I get my fill kind of for writing an adventure product. I get kind of both, best of both worlds, actually.
Okay. That was my own curiosity more than anything else.
Yeah.
So let's before we sign off, I know that you two worked a great deal on this book. Is there anybody else that you would like to recognize their work on this product? Because I know that there's, you know, your team, you have a great team there at Free League, and I don't want anybody to feel unacknowledged. So if there's anybody that did work some on this book that you want to give them some credit for and let folks know of all the hard work that they put in behind it, do you want to acknowledge them now?
I think we've mentioned.
Did you mention everybody? Okay.
If not all of them, there is Lars Strömquist, who has been helping out with some of the maps that we have, but then Rickard has done most of the the battle maps or what?
Yeah, the battle maps. Yeah, exactly. Nice. It always lands back. I do a sketch of one, and then we send it off, and then it's like, or I do it, and then it comes back to me again.
But then Christian is doing the layout together with he's been aptly helped by a new talent, American guy called Thomas Dini. But with Thomas or Christian is doing like the finishing touches on the English book right now. But other than that, I think we have mentioned all of them. You know, Martin and Gustav and
I was going to say our excellent translator from because I write write this in Swedish. What's
Tim,
his name?
Tim Persson. No, Tim. He also translated Emissary Lost and. Yeah. I understand it most of the core book for Coriolis as well. Yeah. So he's
and the thing with that, and this is also like a privilege from my side. It's like to work with a translator that knows kind of the lore, that means he can also kind of ask like, what shouldn't it be like this? Shouldn't it be this faction instead, or you know these kind of things? That's so great to work with a person like that. He kind of knows the rules. He kind of knows you know what everything equates to. In the English version, he knows the kind of the history from the previous books, so he can also kind of comment on that. I think that is for me that was the moment of like when I really was really kind of keen on this product was when I read his translation of my stuff and I read the kind of the scene setting text and I was like, oh damn, this looks like a really interesting game. I really want to play this adventure. You know, I was super excited about it and I was like, that's a good translation. Yeah. So, and I have one person more that is actually a friend of mine here in Stockholm, Joel. He has been running the campaign and he was also one of the first people who laid out eyes on the manuscript on the Mercy of the Icons 1. And gave feedback on that. So some of the restructuring has actually come from him wanting it in a more a cinematic way or, you know, have more of these fun texts in there. Yes. Yeah.
All right. So John is begging that we have more time and I'm going to give him the last question here in the chat. John asks, this will be the last question. I promise. I understand that Mercy of the Icons is setting changing. Will it fundamentally redefine the setting? That's the last question for the whole session. There we go.
Do you want to answer that, Matthias? I don't dare to.
I mean, yeah, it does. And I would say that any adventure chronicle worth its name. Has some form of deep-seated, transformative, epic quality to it. That doesn't mean that me and Rickard or anyone else at Free League exactly knows in what way your third horizon will change.
Yeah.
Because that is definitely one thing that we, making role-playing games instead of, you know, writing novels or making movies, one of the cool things is that our goal is always to make it possible for you to make the game your own and to tell your story. So then this is something that we are discussing wildly for the third and final episode of you know how to really empower you the game masters and the players and their characters to actually be a part of the transformation of the setting.
Yep.
So that was a long answer after the very short one. Yes.
Sure. All right.
That was a good answer.
Though. That was a very good, very good answer. Thank you. And fellow hoodlum says good sci-fi has change in it. So I think that's very true. Very true. All right, I think that's going to do it for this session. I'm going to remind folks that if you would like to pre-order this part two of Mercy of the Icons, Last Cyclade, go to coriolis-rpg.com. Let me know in the comments if you pre-ordered. Also, if you have any other questions, you can put them in there as well. I'll try to answer them as best I can, if I'm allowed, because sometimes I'm not allowed to answer questions, but you know.
You can have us back in a while.
Absolutely. I will be honored to have you both back on the show here in the future. And if you would like to see more Matthias and Ricard, please hit that like button down below. Also, hit that subscribe button. That let you know every single time we go live or upload new content, especially when you hit that little bell notification. That helps us out quite a bit, and it just helps us grow this community on YouTube. And I really, I know we all appreciate the community that we have here, and we just want to keep growing and growing and make this a really great thing here for everyone. So, all right, folks, that's going to do it. Be safe, be well. Thank you for giving your time. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Bye now.